a subject we really have not talked about much in recent years, teen pregnancy. In years past, pundits, policymakers, regular folks alike were wringing their hands about babies having babies. And then it changed. The teen birth rate in the U.S. plummeted by a third between 1991 and 2005. But last week, federal officials reported that that trend has now reversed. The teen birth rate rose by 3% for the first time in 14 years. The increase was the greatest among black teens, which rose 5% between 2005 and 2006. Some people are blaming the increase on abstinence-only education. Other people are blaming sex ed programs, which encourage the use of contraceptives. So, of course, we wanted to ask those who work directly with the numbers and with teens. So we're pleased to have Stephanie Ventura with us. She's the head of the Reproductive Statistics Branch of the National Center for Health Statistics, and Brenda Rhodes Miller, Executive Director of the DC Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. They were kind enough to join me here in the studio. Thanks so much for coming in, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephanie, this is a one-year increase. Does this one-year increase foreshadow a broader trend?
It's really too soon to say. It's just 1 year, as you said, and we would never want to make a trend out of 1 year. But it is it's a reversal of a steady decline of 14 years, and that's why it really caught our attention.
Brenda, the drop in the teen pregnancy rate has been considered a major public health success, a major sort of a social policy success over the decade. Why do you think the rate dropped, and why do you think it's going back up again?
Well, there are only two reasons that the rate would drop. Either teens weren't having sex or they were using contraception more consistently. What we really need to know is what motivated them to make either one of those choices. And if we could identify that motivation, we could step up whatever efforts led to it and increase it so that they're motivated once again to want to avoid pregnancy in the first place.
Stephanie, obviously this has sparked a debate, which obviously is going to have political overtones, but is there anything in the data that can tell us why the rate is moving in the other direction?
I think not, but the one thing that I guess in retrospect we could see that the last few years of that decline, the 34% decline that you mentioned, the decline had slowed down, so the rate of decline was slower. So maybe that was foreshadowing a kind of a turning point where it would start to increase, but I don't think any of us expected there to be an actual increase. It totally took us by surprise.
Is there any, you said that obviously we need to study further. Is there anything that can be done other than just sit back and wait?
Well, I think that, as Brenda said, it's important to look at the programs. I think that it was a major public health success story, the decline over the last 14 years. And one of the things that was special about that those efforts was that I think that there were a lot of programs that were designed to meet the needs of particular teenagers, not one size fits all, but trying to look at their kind of a positive youth development model. And I think that we'll probably, we're not into the programs, but Brenda and her colleagues will be looking at what might be fine-tuned to see that we can get back on that decline again.
Stephanie Ventura is in charge of reproductive statistics at the National Center for Health Statistics. Brenda Rhodes Miller is executive director of the DC Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. We have to take a short break, but they're going to continue with us to talk more about the rise in the teen birth rate in just a moment. We're going to continue our conversation about teen pregnancy. Joining us is Stephanie Ventura, head of the Reproductive Statistics Branch of the National Center for Health Statistics, and Brenda Rhodes Miller, executive director of the DC Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. Just before the break, I was asking Ms. Ventura about this whole sort of debate about abstinence only versus, contraceptive or other sex education programs, and was asking whether there's anything in the data that would help us sort of figure out what's going on. So, Brenda, I wanted to ask you the same question. One of the things obviously that people are pointing to is the increasing popularity of abstinence-only education programs over the last, say, 5 or 6 years, and some people are saying that this reversal is clearly an indication that these programs aren't working. What do you think?
Well, I'd say there's increased funding over the last few years for abstinence-only programs, but in terms of what it really takes to prevent teen pregnancy, we know from the research that the single most important factor is a close caring relationship with a trustworthy adult. But adolescents also have to have a plan for their future. They need to get the health care they're looking for. School success from an early age is a very important factor, and a sense of belonging. But one thing we don't look at so much with teenagers, although we do with younger children, is that they need safe places to spend time with their friends, learning new skills, learning new abilities, figuring out what they want to do with their lives. And so I think those are the kind of things that really deserve increased funding around the country. Because when you invest in young people, you get a payoff. When you don't, you may see, you know, the trend, this anomaly turn into a real trend.
Has something changed, though, in the last couple of years that would have affected that environment, the places for kids to go and things of that sort? I mean,
Stephanie and I were talking about that while we were waiting. And I think at this point we don't know. And one of the things I guess we'll have to do for the next couple of years is watch the data very closely and then look around. What's going on in our communities? We know in Washington that a Carrera model just started in Ward 7. It starts with fifth graders and it follows kids until they graduate from high school. There are about 40-some of those models.
What does
around.
That mean, please, if you'd help us?
It's an after-school program that provides educational support, job club, creative expression through the arts, health care, mental health services. It teaches kids about sexuality, family life education, and it stays with them. It's a family support kind of program, works with the kids, works with the parents, and continues until they graduate from high school. And it shows really tremendous results around the country.
But I guess my question would be, was something like that in place before and it changed? I mean, I guess what everybody's wondering is that you've got this steep decline in this birth rate, and then all of a sudden you see the
well,
trend
you see
moving
an
in a
uptick.
Different way, an uptick. You think something must have changed. What is it that changed?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we know something has changed. So Stephanie said the numbers were slowing down, the decline was slowing down, and then we see an increase. I think until you see 2 or 3 years of data that you really can't make any pronouncements about whether something has changed or not.
The other thing I wanted to call to your attention is the rising teen birth rate was highest among non-Hispanic black teens, 5%. Mm-hmm. Any ideas about why that might be? Stephanie?
Well, that's really a surprise because the non-Hispanic black teens had the major increase over the last 13, 14 years. So that was, very unexpected. And we really just don't know. I mean, one thing that we might say is also point out is that these increases were, non-Hispanic black, but all groups had increases and all teen subgroups by age, the younger teens as well as the older teens. And in fact, birth rates for older women increased too. So this was really increase in childbearing by everybody, which is, I think caught us all by surprise.
Stephanie, I wanted to point out that the report finds a 20% jump in births among mothers who are single, period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think, we sort of just looking around your own sort of circle of friends, you think, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But what do you think that means? Is this indicative of just a broader cultural shift?
Well, that trend actually is not just this 1 year. We do have data that's been going on since 2002. It had been flat from 95 to about 2002, and then it started to turn upward. And that's very perplexing. And it's not a teen issue, by the way. Everybody thinks of teens and unmarried mothers are the same. They're not. Only about 23% of the unmarried mothers are teenagers now, which is, relatively small proportion. So this is really being fueled by adult women.
Mm-hmm. And finally, I wanted to ask either of you, thoughts about fathers. We always talk about the mothers in situations like this, but do we know anything or have any thoughts about what's going on with fathers? Are they supporting this trend? Are they part of the conversation?
Well, I'm glad you raised that issue because if we don't focus on boys, we're really making a huge mistake. The average teenage girl can have one baby a year unless it's a multiple birth. The average teenage boy has an unlimited capacity. And we really have to start focusing on boys and encouraging them to delay fatherhood until they can really fulfill that role. And I think that's one place that we really should put increased attention and increased resources.
Is there anything over the last, say, 14 years when we were seeing the decline in the teen birth rate that Brenda, you can point to that talked about the increased emphasis on fathers, or do you think that the progress mainly was made with mothers?
Well, I think that we saw a period, and I guess Stephanie could give us the data on it, when condom use increased among boys, largely as a result, I think, of HIV education.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case, that there was a turnaround for both boys and girls, but obviously boys were energized about this as well because of the STD concerns.
I wonder if because perhaps there's this myth that HIV/AIDS has become sort of more of a manageable disease among some people if you have access to the right set of health care and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I wonder whether perhaps a myth has taken hold that it's more manageable than people think, and so therefore they're more relaxed about it. I don't know. I'm speculating.
I think it's, you know, that's something that we should be looking at. I think that about a week ago there was a report that STDs had been increasing as well. So this is definitely a whole lot of things that we have to be looking at over the next couple of years.
And what else do you want to know, Stephanie, very briefly? What other questions do you want to be asking the next couple of years to figure out more about what's going on?
Well, I would like to look more at the unmarried mothers, because we have data from the National Survey of Family Growth, which shows that about 40% of the unmarried mothers are in cohabiting relationships. So that's not a legal status, but at least it suggests some kind of support. So this, you know, a two-parent family. So I think it's important to know whether these, you know, how stable these relationships are. They typically aren't that stable.
Mm.
But it's something that we should be looking at as well.
So many, many questions. Yeah. Stephanie Ventura is in charge of reproductive statistics at the National Center for Health Statistics. Brenda Rhodes Miller is the executive director of the D.C. Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy. They were both kind enough to join me here in the studio in Washington. Ladies, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.